It takes just 4 minutes for Maren Machado's world to shatter beyond repair. While Christmas shopping at Seattle's Pike Place Market, she releases her 4-year-old son Sebastian's hand for mere seconds to answer a text message. In that fleeting moment, he vanishes. Security footage later reveals the horrifying truth. Sebastian walked away, willingly, with someone dressed as Santa Claus, clutching the $5 lollipop he'd been begging for all morning. The kidnapper's face remains hidden behind the Santa beard and hat. They disappear through doors leading to an underground parking garage, and just like that, Sebastian is gone. What makes this opening scene so chilling is its ordinary setting, a bustling market during holiday shopping. The kidnapper exploits both Sebastian's innocent desire for a treat and the cultural symbolism of Santa Claus, a figure children are taught to trust. This calculated manipulation of childhood trust makes the abduction all the more disturbing. For Maren, the security footage becomes a form of torture, forcing her to repeatedly witness the moment her son slips away forever, fueling the crushing guilt that will define her existence in the months to come. 16 months after Sebastian's disappearance, Maren exists in limbo. Each morning brings the crushing reality that missing children his age are rarely found after 24 hours, followed by thoughts of suicide that sometimes fade but often whisper constantly while she maintains a facade of normalcy. Maren has resumed cutting hair, finding comfort in its control. Her marriage to Derek has crumbled. He's frequently absent while she attends therapy and a support group for parents of missing children, where no one pretends to heal. There, she connects with Lila, whose son was abducted by his father, Simon, whose daughter vanished from a mall, and Francis, whose son has been missing for 9 years. When Lila cries out, "I don't want this to be my life," her raw honesty resonates with everyone. Francis embodies Maren's feared future, 9 years into grief, beginning to accept her son may never return. Maren clings to her pain, afraid that healing means accepting Sebastian is gone forever. To stop suffering feels like betrayal, severing the final connection to her child. Private investigator Vanessa Castro reveals a devastating truth to Maren. Derek has been having a 6-month affair with Mackenzie Lai, a 24-year-old art student. They travel together and communicate constantly. Derek building a new life while Maren remains consumed with finding Sebastian feels like the ultimate betrayal. The photos Castro shows capture Derek smiling genuinely, something absent with Maren since their son vanished. When Castro suggests they might have reached the investigation's end, Maren firmly refuses. "We're not done. We're not even close to being done." Leaving the office, Maren's sadness transforms into rage, a feeling she welcomes after months of debilitating grief. Unlike sadness that immobilized her, rage energizes her. Using an app to track Derek's movements, Maren drives to Mackenzie's workplace. Seeing the young woman, tall, with pink hair and effortless beauty, makes Maren feel irrelevant. Grief has distorted Maren's moral compass, shifting her focus from finding Sebastian to punishing Mackenzie, a tangible target easier to address than her son's unsolvable disappearance. Maren's rage intensifies when she shows Sal explicit texts between Derek and Mackenzie. She jokes darkly about killing Mackenzie, revealing her deteriorating mental state. Sal, her college ex-boyfriend turned best friend, offers her a fixer who could make bodies disappear. Their conversation reveals crucial history. Despite their breakup, they maintained friendship, though Sal never liked Derek. Most importantly, Derek had cheated before, while Maren was pregnant with Sebastian. After drinking heavily, Maren discovers Derek hasn't ended the affair. She calls Sal and arranges to meet his fixer at midnight at a diner called Frankenstein. There, Maren meets Julian, muscular, bald, wearing a black motorcycle jacket. He calmly states, "Conversations about murder are much easier to have when your stomach is full, don't you think?" Julian quotes $250,000 upfront via wire transfer disguised as a charity donation, leaving her a brochure with account details and until 9 a.m. to decide. How quickly the unthinkable becomes thinkable when pushed to our limits. Marin's progression from fantasy to murder planning unfolds with terrifying plausibility as grief distorts her ethical boundaries. The story pivots when Marin learns of Mackenzie's disappearance. Investigator Castro identifies a disturbing pattern. Two people connected to Derek have vanished, suggesting his involvement. Marin discovers a message sent to Derek showing Mackenzie captive with a demand for $250,000 cash and an ominous reference to Sebastian's fate. Castro reveals Mackenzie and Sal had a teenage relationship that Sal deliberately concealed. He suspects Sal, pressured by his family's failing winery, may have orchestrated Sebastian's disappearance for money. Derek finally admits that weeks after Sebastian vanished, he received proof his son was alive and demands for payment. At the exchange point, Derek found only a toy. When he questioned this, he heard his son's distress before communication cut off. A message later informed him Sebastian was gone because Derek had made a mistake. This revelation transforms Marin's perspective. Her husband's concealment and Sal's apparent betrayal shatters her remaining trust and emotional stability. At the Palermo farmhouse, Marin finds police surrounding the property. Sal has shot his mother, Lorna, and remains inside, willing to speak only with Marin. In their final conversation, Sal confesses everything. He and Julian had orchestrated Sebastian's kidnapping, expecting a quick ransom from Derek. When Derek resisted, they brought Sebastian to the farmhouse, where Lorna became unwittingly complicit, believing she was protecting the boy from an abusive father. As tactical teams prepare to breach, Sal reveals his twisted obsession with Marin. The call ends with his whispered, "I love you," followed by a gunshot. Mackenzie emerges from the property, followed by Sebastian clutching a teddy bear. The boy scans the crowd until he sees Marin. Recognition floods his face as he runs toward her crying, "Mama," while she drops to her knees to embrace him. The betrayal by someone from Marin's inner circle compounds her psychological trauma, even as Sebastian's survival defies the grim statistics of long-term missing children cases. 1 month after Sebastian's rescue, Marin gives Mackenzie $250,000, the same amount she'd paid to have her killed, explaining she needs to clear her conscience. Though not seeing Mackenzie as innocent, Marin acknowledges her kindness to Sebastian during captivity. At a celebration organized by Marin's grief support group, genuine joy awaits. Francis, Simon, Jamie, and Leela have decorated with balloons and brought presents for Sebastian, showing remarkable generosity despite their continuing losses. While Sebastian plays with Leela's children, Marin contemplates her relationship with Derek. They're living together for Sebastian's sake and care for each other as friends, but their future remains uncertain. She can't delete Saul's final messages, the last remnants of their 20-year friendship before his betrayal. His text asking, "You alive?" takes on new meaning as she watches her son play. In the end, what matters is survival itself. Healing doesn't mean forgetting or fully forgiving, but finding a way to carry our wounds while still moving forward.